I'm very happy to welcome to our show, welcome back to our show, I should say, Jessup Bonner, International Program Associate with Public Citizens Trade Watch. Thank you so much for making time to come back on the show, Jessa.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
So we invite you to come back here to talk about the Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement. And you and I and other representatives of groups have talked in the past about a previous battle, and that was over the fast-track legislation, which eventually did squeak by in Congress. That allows the proposed free trade treaty, the Trans-Pacific Free Trade Treaty, to come up in Congress with limited time for debate and no amendments allowed. That's what fast track was, and that passed. The more recent development here is that representatives of the U.S. and 11 other Pacific Rim nations formally signed the Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement just last week on February 4th in New Zealand, which really is the starting time or the launch of the debates and battles in national legislatures for ratification over the next 2 years. And as I understand it, at least six of the 12 countries that have signed on must have their legislatures approve this pact for it to be implemented. Is that pretty much a good summary of what where we're at right now?
Sure, right. So as you mentioned, last week the trade ministers from the 12 countries, they met in Auckland, New Zealand, signed the TPP. And also important to note that thousands of protesters from New Zealand also kind of took to the streets and blocked some of the streets and were protesting as well. So it was certainly met with some opposition. But as you mentioned, basically signing is what locks in the legal text of the agreement. So in a sense, it's the end of negotiations. But as you said, it's kind of just the beginning of the fight for those of us that are concerned with the TPP. So, right, as you mentioned, the way the TPP is written, and more specifically, it can only go into effect if both the U.S. and Japan approve it, based on kind of the rules of, like, what percent of the GDP, plus four other countries. So basically, if the U.S. Congress doesn't approve it, the TPP can't go into effect. So even though they signed the agreement, it's really kind of just the beginning for us.
Thank you for that summary. Jessa, as we begin our discussion about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, I'm certain many of our listeners are well aware of some of the critiques of the TPP, as it's called. But as we begin our discussion, why don't you summarize for us why your group and many others in a broad coalition are fighting to make sure Congress defeats this proposed free trade agreement?
So the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which we refer to as the TPP, is a so-called free trade agreement, and we put the free trade in quotes, between 12 countries, and it's been in negotiation for about 7 years. And the reason that we put the free trade in quotes is because really the TPP has to do with a lot more than what we think of as typical trade issues. So of the TPP's 30 chapters, actually, only six of them have to do with these traditional trade issues in terms of lowering, getting rid of tariffs, et cetera. But instead, what we've seen in the TPP is that there are many provisions that actually benefit multinational corporations over workers, the environment, consumers, et cetera. So this is not actually that surprising, given how the deal was negotiated. So as I mentioned, it was in negotiations for about 7 years. It took a really long time, in part because there was a lot of opposition, global opposition to the deal. But it was basically negotiated in secret, and so the public and the press and civil society were locked out of the negotiations for the majority of the time that the TPP was in negotiations. U.S. members of Congress were locked out, too. And at the end, they received, after a lot of complaining, they received some kind of nominal access where they could request to view certain parts of it. They couldn't talk about it. They couldn't take any notes, et cetera. But at the same time, as all of these actors were locked out, there were about 500 so-called advisors. So the majority of them representing industry interests, representing corporate interests, that actually had access to the text in the negotiations. And so it's not surprising that the TPP, you know, would benefit these corporations over workers and consumers. And when they finally released the text, we actually saw that it was worse than we thought it would be. There's a lot of concerns. For example, it includes the same kind of language that was in NAFTA that actually makes it easier for big corporations to offshore more American jobs. The TPP would also push down our wages for the jobs that are left because it basically pits American workers more directly in competition with, for example, workers in Vietnam who might make less than 65 cents an hour. It includes monopoly rights for big pharmaceutical companies that raise medicine prices. It would flood us with more imports of unsafe food. It also includes the very controversial investor-state dispute settlement, which allows corporations to challenge public interest policies that they can say affects their ability to make a future profit. There's concerns about internet freedom, rolls back environmental standards. Really, as you mentioned, there's kind of something for everyone to hate, and that's why there's an unprecedented number of organizations that are working against the TPP to try to make sure that Congress will reject it.
Thanks for that summary, Jessa. Tell us about the coalition that's come together to oppose the Trans-Pacific Partnership when it finally comes to a vote in Congress. Who's part of this coalition, and what's the strategy?
Mm-hmm. Well, so we actually kind of had a little bit of a head start because this coalition started to develop during, as you mentioned, the Fast Track fight, and it has ultimately evolved to be really an unprecedented coalition of organizations from working for so many different issue areas. So, for example, all the major labor unions, a lot of concerns about the labor provisions in this deal, major environmental groups. So, for example, the Sierra Club, Defenders of Wildlife, Greenpeace, 350.org, just to name a few, many faith groups, internet freedom groups, consumer groups, a lot of local groups concerned, et cetera, and just so many different groups just representing such a wide variety of issue areas. And so actually there was a letter that was released earlier this year that had 1,500 groups signed on from all of these different issue areas and many others urging Congress to reject the TPP, and in no small part because of all this opposition, it's really kind of become a very politically toxic issue. And so the movement against the TPP continues to grow and just include more and more groups as more people are kind of realizing about these concerns of the TPP.
Jessa, I know around the date that the TPP was signed by the 12 nations in Auckland, New Zealand, there was a protest in Washington, D.C. by several cancer patients who were voicing their concern about provisions in the TPP where the cost of medicine could skyrocket. Could you explain to our listeners a bit about the connection between this trade agreement and the price of medicines?
Sure. Well, so one of the biggest sticking points actually in the negotiations was around the IP chapter, the intellectual property chapter, where we saw the U.S. at the behest of big pharmaceutical companies pushing to include what unfortunately was ultimately included, but basically new monopoly rights for big pharmaceutical companies that would raise medicine prices. And this is a major concern, you know, in developing country members of TPP. Could really be a death sentence if we're talking about increasing the price of life-saving access to treatment for HIV, AIDS, and cancer. And for people in the United States, it's going to mean higher prices. And there's really no evidence that these rules actually spur innovation or create jobs, as the industry says. And it's really concerning because these terms are actually not alterable without consensus by all signatories. So it's kind of locking in these new monopoly rights for the big pharmaceutical companies. And as you mentioned, last week, actually on World Cancer Day, there was a protest outside of the building that houses Pharma, which is basically the lobby group that has been working to push these increases in monopolies, et cetera, through the TPP. And so basically, there were a lot of, there were patients, there were also activists, medical students, other healthcare professionals basically came together at Pharma on World Cancer Day to protest against the TPP, as well as two brave women who actually have advanced cancer, actually were arrested inside the lobby of the building. And there's a great, for people that are interested in watching this, there's some great footage and video of this protest and these two brave women being arrested on our Facebook page. So if you go to the Global Trade Watch Facebook page, you can see footage from this and also get a lot more information about these issues.
We're speaking with Jessup Bonner, International Program Associate with Citizens, Public Citizens Global Trade Watch. We're talking about the campaign being organized by a number of labor, environmental, citizens groups, civil society groups here in the United States and around the world in opposition to the Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement. Jessup, one of the big issues that's prominent in the debate over the Trans-Pacific Partnership is whether or not that trade agreement would be a boon to the U.S. economy and to good-paying U.S. jobs. President Obama, who, of course, is spearheading and backing this trade agreement, says that the TPP will help the U.S. economy. There was a study by the Peterson Institute I read about, a private think tank, that estimated that the trade pact would boost annual real incomes for Americans by $131 billion or 0.5% of the U.S. economic output by 2030. There's another study that people might have been reading about by researchers at Tufts University that found significantly smaller income gains to the U.S. and said that the Pacific Trade Accord would likely lead to employment losses and increases in inequality. There are a lot more studies than just these two that I cited here, but maybe you could shed some light on who are those interested parties coming up with these studies and these numbers, you know, on one side or the other of this debate.
Sure. Well, yes, both of those studies have been kind of in the news recently, recently released. So actually, we did kind of a fact check of the first study you mentioned by the Peterson Institute, and if you kind of look closely at the study. One of our major critiques is that it actually kind of relies on some unreliable or unlikely assumptions. For example, it assumes that there will be a full employment. But even in spite of that, the outcome that actually comes out of this Peterson Institute study is actually not that rosy for U.S. workers and the economy, despite the fact that the Obama administration and other pro-TPP supporters are kind of cherry-picking data from it and really pushing this study. So, for example, if you actually look at the income gains in the study, they're really very small. So it accounts for a total of 0.5% by 2030. So that means that the gain in U.S. growth with the TPP at the end of 15 years sums up to 0.5%. And if you look more closely, they're not highlighting this, but the study actually shows that more than 500,000 U.S. jobs will be lost in the PAC's first 10 years. So I guess some of the people that are really pushing the TPP are kind of assuming that those people that are going to lose their jobs are just going to automatically find other jobs, which we know doesn't always happen. And we've also seen with NAFTA that a lot of people that have lost jobs under NAFTA, when they've had to take a different job, they've actually seen a decrease in wages. So it's really not beneficial for workers. And so the Obama administration was actually called out by the Wall Street Journal. I don't know if folks might have seen this, but for trying to kind of distort the numbers of this study, and they ended up kind of changing a few of their graphs. But one of the reasons that they're really pushing these studies, even though they're not this study, even though it's not the results are not that impressive, is that even a USDA study concluded that even if all tariffs are slashed to zero in the TPP, or like were they to be, it would increase the U.S. GDP by 0% in 2025. So really what we're seeing in a lot of these studies, and you also mentioned the Tufts study, which does not predict such a rosy outcome and kind of relies on what we think are much more realistic assumptions than some of these other ones, but even the ones that are being pushed by the deal's cheerleaders, we're seeing that the economic gains that they're finding are actually really minimal, and it's really not, the TPP is really not going to benefit the American worker.
Thanks for that, Jessa. One quick thing. I wanted to get to politics because we are, of course, in the midst of a presidential election campaign, and I wanted to get your take on, you know, who's favoring and opposing this trade deal in this election year. But make a quick mention, if you would. The Obama administration is promoting the Trans-Pacific Partnership by saying that if the United States doesn't spearhead these trade rules, then China will, and this is spoken about in the context of global competition between the United States and China. What's your take on the fact that the U.S. has to put its imprint on a trade deal here, or China will take the lead?
Mm-hmm. Well, so we've seen this argument come up before, and we kind of refer to this as kind of the sales pitch of last resort, that a lot of times administration will kind of make this argument kind of some scaremongering about China when they're kind of running out of, they're seeing that the what these studies and other things are predicting are really minimal economic gains. They kind of pivot to this kind of argument. And we've seen the same arguments for NAFTA. And the fact that any of these U.S. trade agreements would control this process is completely contradicted by the record. And in fact, actually Chinese-owned firm that operate in the U.S. lobbied for the TPP. So it's really, we're not at all convinced that this would actually change. The real question that we think needs to be asking is who is writing these rules. So they're arguing that we need to write the rules before China does, but really the 500 corporate advisors that were able to have access to the text are the ones that were able to have a big impact on crafting these rules. So we think that really the rules are kind of being written to benefit multinational corporations and not workers, not the everyday American.
Well, Jessa, I wanted to get to the election campaign question. Tell us about the candidates running for president, both on the Democratic and Republican side, and their support or opposition to the TPP, to the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement.
Sure. Well, so as I mentioned, this is in no small part due to the large amount of opposition to the deal. This has really become a politically toxic issue. And really, at this point, the TPP might not even be sent to Congress for approval during this Congress, given that we're an election year and there's been enough pushback. There really isn't a clear majority of support, particularly in the House of Republicans. And as you mentioned, the people that are in the presidential race that are running for president have really kind of felt the pushback from the American citizens that this is really not a popular issue, that Americans are really opposing this. And because of that, the major people that are vying for the presidency have really had to come out in opposition to the TPP. So, you know, we have Hillary came out opposing the TPP, as well as Bernie Sanders. So both of the candidates that are running on the Democrat side, as well as many of the major candidates that are in the Republican race. So we're really seeing that this issue is one that that is really, really politically toxic, and for that reason, there's really the movement to defeat the TPP is really alive and well, and it's very much not a sure thing that Congress would approve the TPP, or that it will even be brought up for a vote.
And it seems like, from things I've been reading, a vote on the Trans-Pacific Partnership may not come up until after the presidential election is over, right?
That's certainly possible. Those of us that are working you know, to make sure that the TPP is defeated, we are standing guard and watching and prepared and continuing to do outreach to get people to contact their member of Congress, et cetera. But it is really a politically toxic issue, and that is absolutely possible.
Jessa, lastly, are there any public opinion polls that have been done recently on public attitudes towards this proposed Trans-Pacific Partnership?
Well, so, I mean, there's a lot of polls that are done on different sides. One of the thing that tends to come out of polls are that people in general tend to kind of support the idea of free trade, but once you get started talking about the provisions that are in the trade deals, NAFTA, previous trade agreements, and what the TPP will actually do, there's very much not a lot of there's a lot of opposition to these types of NAFTA-style deals.
Got it. Okay, well, we're out of time. Thank you so much for covering a lot of ground here in our time this evening, Jessa, about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And leave our audience with the website for your group, Public Citizens Global Trade Watch, or I know there's some other sites as well.
Sure. So go to tradewatch.org. There's a lot of great resources about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, as well as a really easy tool that you can just pop in your zip code, and it'll directly connect you to your member of Congress so you can urge them to oppose the TPP. There's also, on the issue of access to medicines, there's a website called tppkills.org, and that has a lot of great information about TPP's threats to access to medicines. And we didn't discuss this time very much the investor-state dispute settlement, but that's another major issue. And if you go to istscorporateattacks.org, you can get a lot of information about that as well.
Very good. As always, thank you so much, Jessa, for your important work out there on this and many other issues. Appreciate it.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Jessa. Bye-bye. That's Jessa Bonner, International Program Associate with Public Citizens Global Trade Watch, discussing with us the proposed Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement.